In the news.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Jonathan Broder, contributing editor at Newsweek, and Richard Lautendress at TVA Nouvelle. Our moderator is columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports, Paul Brandes.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. Oil tankers are attacked in the Gulf of Oman. The United States says Iran is to blame. President Trump on what he would do if given information about a political rival by a foreign power. This as the 2020 campaign heats up. Democrats hold hearings on the Mueller report, and a big figure from the Watergate era showed up. The latest on tariffs and trade with China and Mexico, and big protests in Hong Kong. The issue, should citizens there be extradited to China for trial? Well, let's start with this issue of these two oil tankers attacked in the Gulf of Oman. The United States says Iran is to blame. Iran denies it. Now, the United States, Jonathan, had already blamed Iran for similar attacks a few weeks ago. Iran denies involvement in those incidents, too. Clearly, a very dangerous situation.
It is. It's a very escalatory situation. It all goes back to a year ago when the United States pulled out of the nuclear deal with Iran and reinstated sanctions against Iran. It decimated the Iranian economy. And then, just a few months ago, the Trump administration escalated their economic war against the Iranians by withdrawing sanctions waivers that they had given to eight of Iran's largest oil customers. And this severely reduced their oil sales. Again, we don't know exactly who is carrying out these attacks, but Iran is not going to take this lying down. They have a history of resistance when they are pushed against the wall. As you mentioned, there was an attack a month ago against four tankers. The Central Command is presenting film or video that shows an Iranian, what they claim to be an Iranian boat, removing a limpet mine from one of the stricken tankers. It's not very convincing. It's not definitive or dispositive. So this is a situation that remains extremely tense. But interestingly, the United States has not indicated that they are going to retaliate militarily for this. The Trump administration does not want another war. What they're talking about is maintaining their policy of maximum pressure against the Iranians in an effort to force them to the negotiating table.
Richard, where do you think this is going?
It's always interesting because it's hard to predict, Paul. You know, this White House that we cover on a daily basis is a mixture of bravado and improvisation. And just like this week again, the president was asked if he had a plan, and he pointed to his head saying the plan is here. So until the president finally makes a decision and states that this is going to be the way that the country is going to follow, it's hard to say. It's pretty obvious, as Jonathan was underlining, that at this very moment, the president doesn't want to go to war. He said it himself, but he has around him Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and John Bolton, his advisor, his National Security Advisor. They have been opponent to this Iranian regime. And so at this moment, it's hard to imagine that the president is going to resist, you know, the details of that could bring the two countries into some sort of confrontation. You know, we just need a spark. So it's very hard to predict. I would only say that I was listening to the president this week when he was receiving Andrzej Duda, the Polish president at the White House, and he was talking about moving troops and putting troops in Poland. And he said he's going to move them actually from Germany. So the president really doesn't want to get into a military buildup anywhere, even when he has allies asking for help or troops. He's going to take them somewhere else and put them there, but not from the U.S. So at this moment, even if there's tension, just as Jonathan underlined, I do not see the Americans at this moment getting involved in a major military.
It's interesting to remember that when then-candidate Trump was running for office a couple of years ago, 2016, he kept saying, well, the United States has just gotten too many wars. We've spent too much money in these parts of the world. We've really gotten nothing out of it. And he, by and large, has stuck to that theme, but I think, Richard, you make a good point about some of these hardliners like Bolton and such, who Bolton has always wanted war. His own words have said, you know, that we need to change the regime in Iran. So Trump perhaps being pulled both ways here. But in the end, Richard seems right. I mean, Trump does not want to go in.
No, he does not at all. And you could see even from the statement that Pompeo made. I mean, here is Pompeo, one of the hawks that we're talking about. His statement was very clear at the end. He said, we will follow a policy, an economic policy and a diplomatic policy, and we urge the Iranians to return to a diplomatic policy.
All right.
There was no mention of military.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. But let's move on domestically here. President Trump told an American television network that he would not necessarily alert the FBI, that, of course, the premier law enforcement agency in this country, he would not alert the FBI if he was approached by foreign figures with information on his 2020 campaign rival. Now, even some Republicans, Richard, have criticized him for making these comments. And, of course, it comes just weeks after this two-year Mueller investigation wrapped up. Why would he say something like that?
I cannot figure out any other reason than he was caught by surprise by the question itself from George Stephanopoulos of ABC. I think the president, we can only try to figure out what's in his mind. First, I just want to underline just what you said, Paul. We're just out of a 22-month investigation into Russian interference in our electoral system, in the American election, 2016 election. This week, his son, Don Jr., his elder son, had to go back and testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee about his meeting with Russians in a Trump Tower in 2016, and the president, and he still has to answer questions on this very topic. And the president spontaneously says, well, no, he's not going to go to the FBI with, necessarily go to the FBI with information. So my impression is that fundamentally the president is seeing information's coming to him about his rivals in a major election as a legitimate source of way to fight an electoral fight. Whatever the cost, wherever the information comes from, President judged that if it is good for his campaign and for himself, he's going to use it. Besides, for all the suspicions there is about his victory around his victory in 2016, I think the president is trying to rationalize, surround his victory with a reasoning that the information we get from foreign powers are just informations in the large scope of things that are around in a campaign.
Here's a quote from him. He says, there isn't anything wrong with listening. Is that true?
Yes. Let's be very, very clear about something here. It is illegal under American law for an American politician or figure to take something of value, which can be either money or it can be information that will help that candidate in their campaign. It's illegal. Now, Trump clearly doesn't believe this or doesn't care. It's quite astonishing, actually, that he's taken this attitude. The principle here is that the president, when he takes his oath of office, promises to uphold the laws of the United States and defend the Constitution. Trump seems to have a different view of this, as we can see from some of the comments from Republicans. Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, one of Trump's biggest defenders, even he has said, no, this is wrong. The head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, an appointee of Donald Trump, said on the Hill in testimony about a month ago that if someone is giving you information, or you're a candidate, and someone is approaching you from a foreign country giving you information, we want to know about it. You should report this to us. Now, there is a law that Democrats are now proposing, saying that this is going to be even strengthened, that if any foreign entity comes to you, not just a foreign government, but a foreign entity comes to you as a candidate and to give you information, you must tell the FBI about this.
Republicans have blocked that law, though.
Yes, and I believe they'll block it again. But this is obviously an attempt by the Democrats to make some sort of political hay out of this.
That's interesting. In the meantime, this 2020 campaign, it seems incredible. It's only June of 2019 here, and people are talking about the 2020 election here, but the first Democratic debate is just a couple of days away, and these Democrats are crowing now that there have been a series of polls in recent weeks, and they all show President Trump trailing every major Democratic candidate, Biden and Sanders and Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg, the young mayor. Polls at this point don't really mean that much, or do they?
Well, polls covering the entire country probably don't mean that much. We have to stop state by state and see the outcome. But actually, we saw this in Texas, for instance, where indeed the president would be beaten by Joe Biden. But in this week, I think the Tuesday Quinnipiac poll that gave us the major candidates, as you were saying, facing the president. And the difference is not just a couple of points, but it was up to 13 points in Joe Biden's case, 9 points for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, again, he's a very interesting candidate for the Democrats, but he's a very left-to-the-center candidate. And still, around the country, they prefer him more than having the president. What is also interesting, when you look at the polls, it's the 2020 Democratic candidates, but it's also the president's approval, which remains extremely low, except for one firm, Rasmussen. It's all the other ones confirm that he's like several points, up to 17 points, a difference between the people disapproving what he does and the people approving him.
All right. Well, let's pause for a short break. More issues in the news in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now, back to our panel. Jonathan Broder, contributing editor at Newsweek, and Richard Lautendress at TVA Nouvelle. Our moderator is columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports, Paul Brandis.
Welcome back. You know, a minute ago, we were just talking about the 2020 campaign and the Mueller investigation and all of that. And it turns out the Justice Department has agreed to hand over parts of the Mueller investigation files from this completed 22-month investigation to congressional committees that, of course, are run by Democrats who continue the investigation. The Mueller probe, of course, has wrapped up, but congressional Democrats, of course, are continuing the probe on their own. Now, Democrats, if you talk to them, say that the Mueller report shows not a smoking gun, but in the words of one, a smoking cannon of crimes allegedly committed by the president. Republicans, of course, say it's just a bunch of hogwash. What do you say?
Well, the dynamic here is that the Democrats realize that the Trump report, which is 440-something pages long, that most Americans haven't read it. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to use the power of Congress to shine light on things, its power of oversight, to bring to light the elements that are in the report that they feel incriminate the president. Now, the problem is that the president and his administration are basically stonewalling. They're not providing, they've said they're not going to respond to any subpoenas. They're not going to provide witnesses. They're not going to provide documents. So in this particular case, the Judiciary Committee threatened the Attorney General, William Barr, with contempt of Congress for not providing these documents. When it came down to the crunch, Barr basically relented, is handing over some of the documents. We don't know exactly what documents he's going to hand over. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler of New York, has basically said, okay, we will hold off on the contempt declaration, but we have to wait and see what documents he provides. The other issue here is that there was a hearing of one of the committees where they brought in John Dean, the former White House counsel during the Watergate days, and several federal prosecutors. These are people who have appeared on MSNBC, which is a very left-leaning television cable station. And because they can't get the witnesses that they want to get, they have to get basically talking heads from these left-wing television stations, once again, to try to shine light on what the president did. But I would say that when it comes to the battle for public opinion right now, I would say that the administration is winning, because right now it's basically just television personalities.
And, you know, Richard, there's this increasing pressure under Nancy Pelosi, of course, the Speaker of the House, to begin impeachment hearings against the president. She continues to resist. I think she's looking at the polls that show there is not a groundswell of support for this. And yet a lot of people in her own caucus, Democratic Party, are saying, you've got to do this. What is she going to do?
Well, she is maintaining the same line, which is fundamentally, I want him to be, she is a Democrat, let's not forget this. She wants to beat the president, who's a Republican. I want to beat him fair and square in an election. So it's not going to be a presidency taken away from him, but the electorate will have made a choice. So we see no signs that she will go, she'll divert from this course. Even if the pressure is strong from 50-some members of her caucus and one Republican, I think she indeed look at the polls, but even the candidate that want to run for the Democratic Party in the next election. I was listening to Pete Buttigieg reminding reporters that when he talks to people everywhere, people talk about healthcare problems and their own finances and the price of gas, but nobody says, hey, what's up with the Mueller report? And even if we can be, and Jonathan said it so rightfully that very few people have read the report, even if there are things in there that would definitely need to be brought forward constantly, that's not what the Americans, the electorate, are sending back as signals to Congress. And I believe we have to, she understands that she has to be careful not to lose this battle of, okay, the Democratic Party is actually just putting the emphasis on this very point and not being interested in anything else.
Well, that's a very good point. And when you look at, as you were talking, Richard, I was thinking about sort of what powered these Democrats to win in the November midterm elections. And it was not so much anti-Trump, as you say, but it was these bread and butter local issues, housing issues and the price of pharmaceuticals and this kind of thing, and gun control and all of this stuff. Now, politics is a local. It's a kind of a cliche, but it's true. And I think that seems to be what she is trying to do. Kind of the thinking is, well, this is what worked for us in the midterms. Why don't we stick with what has been successful going forward?
There's one other aspect of this as well. She's very well aware that the way impeachment works is that the House impeaches, which is basically another word for indicting, bringing a charge against someone, and it's the Senate that either convicts or does not convict. The Senate right now is in the hands of the Republicans, and there is no way that they are going to convict Trump. So you might get the sort of the moral satisfaction of impeaching the president, but the fear within the Democratic leadership and Pelosi is that Trump will be not convicted by the Senate, and then he will use the fact that the Senate didn't convict him to play the victim, probably raise $100 million.
Fire up his base.
Right. And then cruise to victory.
Well, last week we were also talking about President Trump and his threat to slap Mexico with tariffs unless it did more to stop undocumented immigrants from trying to come to the United States. He is now backed off that threat. So those tariffs are off for now. But the tariff spat with China, of course, rolls on, shows no signs of abating, Richard.
No, absolutely not. And this is going to be very interesting. The G20 summit is coming soon, too. It's going to happen in Osaka, Japan. Everything rests at this moment, it sounds, that's the impression the White House gives us, on the meeting of Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, and President Trump, to find a way to break the deadlock at this very moment. The administration insists that it's not going to back up, but it's very hard to figure out. And when we read our correspondence reports from China, very hard to imagine that the Chinese themselves are going to change their entire economic system. Jonathan, you know the country well. How would China decide to say exactly what we've taken decades to build? We're going to change it because the Americans want to threaten us with tariffs. It's hard to imagine. But at this moment, there's no other way out but this meeting between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump.
That's very, very true. What you've got now is it's almost like an unstoppable force, an immovable object. You're absolutely right that Xi Jinping is not going to bend, particularly given the style with which Trump is approaching this. You know, there's a very important concept in China and in Asia. In Chinese, it's called Li, which means face, your honor. And there are ways to save face and reach agreements diplomatically and in economics and in trade. But Trump basically has said publicly that if Li doesn't show up for this G20 meeting, which Xi has not committed to yet, mm-hmm. by the way, if he doesn't show up, then Trump is going to expand the tariffs against, I think, 25% tariffs on the remaining $300 billion worth of trade that the United States does with China, basically meaning that everything that China produces and exports to the United States is going to have a 25% tariff on it. That is going to be devastating. And who's going to pay for that? The American public is going to pay for that.
Because tariffs, of course, are simply a tax on the consumer at the very end of the
exactly.
process. It's important to remember that. Speaking of China, in our remaining moments, I do want to talk about these big protests that we've seen in Hong Kong in the past couple of days. Up to 1 million people, news reports have said, up to 1 million people taking to the streets there to protest this bill to extradite Hong Kong citizens who have been accused of a crime, extradite them to the Chinese mainland for trial. Of course, Hong Kong became kind of a separate part of China back in 1997 after the British relinquished its colonial control. What's the latest there? Where is this going to go? I mean, how much control does Beijing really want to have over Hong Kong?
When the British handed over China, Hong Kong to China in 1997, they handed it over under agreement that called for one state, two systems. Basically, it was a way to bring Hong Kong back under Chinese rule, but because it had been under British colonial rule for so many years, for 100 years or more, it had a capitalistic system. China needed to recognize, because of the value of Hong Kong in bringing in trade into China, that the capitalistic system that Hong Kong was operating under needed to be maintained. So they came up with this formula of one state, Hong Kong is part of China, but two systems, China's communist system and Hong Kong's capitalist system. They basically said that this system of one state, two systems would remain in force until 2050 or 2049. Mm-hmm. However, since the handover in 1997, China has been slowly trying to impose its system, its government system, on Hong Kong. This is the latest version of that. There were earlier attempts in 2003, 2014. People in Hong Kong don't want this, and they are now protesting. But where it's going to stand, the Council of Hong Kong is dominated by Beijing people, and the law will probably go through.
All right. We'll have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Jonathan Broder, he's contributing editor at Newsweek, and Richard LaTendresse, he's with Canada's TVA Nouvelle. This program was produced by VOA. Our producer, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Justin Thwaites. And I'm Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports and USA Today. Thank you for joining us.
From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America,